I am delighted to have with me Dr. Laura Fielding, PsyD-EDM. She is a clinical psychologist based in California. And Laura, thank you so much for getting up early to be with us, who specializes in mindfulness-based cognitive behavioral therapies. Her approach is research-based and aimed to help build stress, resilience, and effective coping, something that's really sort of on everyone's mind today. She is trained in using ACT and DBT, dialectical behavioral therapy, and was previously a supervising psychologist at the UCLA Department of Psychology's clinic for students training in these treatments. She is the author of a new book, Mastering Adulthood, Go Beyond Adulting to Become Emotional and Grown Up. And since I have an adulting 21-year-old, she'd be so upset if I were talking about it. She knew I was talking about her on the radio, but I don't think she's up yet. Anyway, Lara, welcome to Dr. Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I really appreciate your getting up so early on the other side and the other coast, the best coast, whatever you want to call it. Before we get to our youngsters trying to get out of the nest, tell us a little bit about your story about getting into psychology and how you decided to focus on young adults.
Well, I was a returning student. I had actually dropped out of high school at 15.
Oh, good. I'm sorry. I don't mean good that you dropped out. I mean, I'm glad to hear that there's a future. Go ahead.
There absolutely is. And telling my story, often my clients certainly find it helpful to hear a little bit when I have a 26 or 27-year-old going through the quarter-life crisis and thinking, oh, I've missed my opportunities. I don't know what I'm doing. They're often relieved to hear that I actually returned to school at 33. Yeah. And I walked around my whole life thinking I was a dumb blonde and that there was no way I could go back to school. When someone suggested, because I was a voracious, especially self-help reader, as well as I used to joke that I would read everything with a penguin on it because I was worried that I missed it in school. So when someone suggested that I could go back to school, that was sort of foreign to me. But I decided one day to just whisk over to Santa Monica City College, our local city college, and it happened to be the last day to register. And they said, well, are you going to register? And I said, I can't. I'm a high school dropout. They said, oh, you could do that while you're here. It was $11 a unit, which made the bar really low. And so I'm eternally grateful to them and their guidance. I took Psych 101 and an art history class, and I got A's.
Wow.
So that was terribly reinforcing. I was super excited, and I was just really also the personal reason I went back to school and I was so hungry for answers was I wanted to know what was the difference between what makes one person thrive when they're transitioning into adulthood and what makes another person sort of stumble. I actually grew up kind of in the fashion industry. I did modeling, and I had a good career at that. And so as did my sister, who did not make choices that were effective. And she stumbled into Playboys and drugs and serious problems from which she never course-corrected. And I couldn't help my sister, and I couldn't help other friends of mine that I was watching making these really difficult choices in an environment that was not supportive, that was hugely competitive. And I wanted to learn, A, how do I self-preserve? At the time, I was really afraid I was going to stumble too. And B, how could I help other people learn what I learned from the science of psychology and improve their lives and prevent things that were preventable?
So you dropped out of school at 15 to model.
Yes.
So you had a reason to drop out of school. I mean, I'm just asking, you know.
I was that conscious of it for sure at the time.
I see.
And as I don't think dropping out is a conscious decision for most anyone, unless you have to feed your family and it's wartime or something. I think that there are various learning reasons that we can figure out these days, but I just think that people learn at their own pace. And unlike modeling, you can go back to school, right? I hear a lot of parents worry that if I let my child take a break now, they'll never go back.
Right.
And
I'm one of those parents. She finished high school.
Full disclosure, I'm not a parent, and I totally understand those concerns. What I try to do is support parents in supporting their child in an effective way that doesn't accidentally push the adult child away, but supports them in trying to increment by increment, figure out what it is that will give their life meaning, that they can really connect from an internal motivation standpoint. That's where our values work comes in.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about what you do. But for folks who are just tuning in, I'm Dr. Carol Bernstein, a professor of psychiatry and neurology here at NYU. My guest is Dr. Lara Fielding. She is a psychologist based in California who specializes in mindfulness and cognitive behavioral therapies, specifically designed to help young adults who may be stumbling or stuck. And I want to talk about the term adulting, which I understand is new in the lingo, although I had never heard it. So if any of you out there have a child who is, either has returned to the nest, has dropped out of high school, dropped out of college, struggling, and you're trying to figure out how to be, a very dear psychologist friend of mine who is frequently on this radio show named Yamalis Diaz has talked to me about scaffolding, which I think is a really excellent term. But how do we help our young adults today move forward? If you're concerned about that, our phone lines are open at 1-877-NYU-DOCS. That's 1-877-698-3627. You can also email us at docs@SiriusXM.com. So, Lara, first of all, let's explain this term adulting, which I literally had never heard before. And I gather it's quite in the vernacular these days.
It is. I think it's actually been added to certainly the Urban Dictionary, if not other dictionaries, as a term. So in the title of the book is Beyond Adulting, because adulting specifically means it just taking on adult responsibilities, accomplishing those mundane tasks that are necessary to take care of yourself, doing laundry, balancing a checkbook, or using a software tool in these days, just basically, paying your rent, getting a regular job. And nobody aspires to say, when I grow up, I want to be able to pay my bills and do the laundry. Right? That's not a motivating situation to be moving into. So the book is about going beyond that and finding what does drive you.
Well, so why do you think, and I'm actually really curious about this, as I said, I have a 21-year-old. Why do you think this generation, the 20-somethings, let's say, maybe even the 30-somethings, but certainly the 20-somethings, are having so much trouble both coping with difficult emotions in the process of navigating the real world, and why some of, why many of them, I think, start college, drop out, or go and take classes as you did. I mean, my daughter, for one, I think she has seen people finish college. She's not a friend of school. There are kids that love school and do well, and there are others for whom it's more of a challenge because they're just not wired that way. It's kind of like, well, they're struggling anyway, so why should I do this 4-year college thing when I don't even know what I want to do with my life? So why do you think it's so different for this generation? Because I think it is.
It absolutely is, and the statistics are there in terms of increases in dropouts and mental health difficulties, and even 33% of at least the millennial generation has returned to the nest or still lives at home.
Right.
At least as of a couple of years ago. So I believe strongly there's really a one-word answer, and it's access. The environment has changed substantially, so our adapting to it is changing as well, and especially at this delicate developmental period. So it's not just 20-somethings, as you sort of noted. It started with our millennial generation, the generation that came of age right at the turn of the millennial. And the access creates two particular problems. One is the one we hear more about, which is the social comparisons. Everyone's doing something great.
That's right. It's all on Facebook. Everybody's happy. Right.
Exactly. And we know for decades, if not longer, almost a century of research, that when we're doing something new, first, the social comparison theory says that when we don't have an objective measure of success, and we don't really have an objective measure of success these days because the criteria and standards are just moving all over the place. So when we don't have that objective measure, we turn to social comparisons, and we have an abundance of social comparisons where everyone's perfectly curated lives are being presented before us. So that creates what we call an upward or a downward comparison situation that makes us feel, if it's upward, insecure and more inhibited. Secondly, we know that when we're doing something new in front of people, if we're doing something new, we're going to falter at it. If we're already expert, we'll do better at it. But if we're new and just figuring out something and we're doing it in front of people, we're going to falter. So I think those two, so it's not just social media, but it's actually just the access of the internet. And then if you'd like to know my theory of what's happening in terms of the emotions part of it, it creates this overly distracted mind, right, where we're constantly, there's always, oh, what's next? What can I turn to?
Right,
What social media page can I check? Which makes an over-flexible thinking apparatus, if you will, which ties into the emotion system. So not only is there a sort of a flexibility in our thinking, but there's also too much access grants us too many opportunities to distract from discomfort and to distract away from things that we have to hold, we would normally have to attend to and buckle down and move through.
It's so, kind of like swipe right on Tinder whatever.
Swipe right on everything in your life.
Right.
No, I don't want pizza. I think I'll have Chinese. I think I'll have, I'll have pot. I'll have whatever you want. Yes.
I thought you were talking about lack of access, but you're in a way talking about too much access.
Yes. I'm definitely talking about too much access.
Wow, that's interesting. I mean, I was just saying, because the other thing I think that happens with everything that, you know, we see is that people think they're going to be the next discovery. They're going to be the next Mark Zuckerberg. Mm-hmm. They're going to be the next Justin Bieber. They're going to be found, and they're going to be it, and then they're going to be famous, and then they're going to have millions of dollars.
Yes.
So I think that that play, and no one understands that for most of us, I mean, the people that are famous in that way, you can count on your hands. You know?
Right. Well, how could they understand? They've grown up in an environment where they see right into everyone's world, starting with the Kardashians down. And there was a difference in parenting that began in the late 80s and early 90s. And the education system, where the self-esteem movement and this movement of everyone should feel really good about themselves all the time.
Right. Everybody gets a trophy. Nobody gets disappointed. It really makes me crazy. So, again, I just want to remind our listeners that our phone lines are open. We'd love to hear from you. Do you have a child who's recently graduated from college and moved home or is out on his or her own for the first time? What are the challenges your kids are having? Are you still financially supporting your child? I don't want to tell you how many of my friends are, even when their friends are working at good jobs in their 30s. Are you paying their rent and or their cell phone bill? We'd love to hear from you at 1-877-NYU-DOCS. That's 1-877-698-3627. You can also email us at docs@SiriusXM.com. So, Lara, what do you tell the kids? What do you tell the parents? Help. my daughter did a year of college and then said, look, you know, I don't want to do this right now. And I said, okay, then you have to get a job, which she did, which is good. But it's not enough to support herself. I mean, it's really not, you know, $12, $13 an hour, really, you know.
Yeah. Well, she's in your daughter's defense, she's a bit of a step ahead of the game.
Because she's got a job.
She's 21.
Right, yes.
Right, so she's doing better than many that I hear from. Of course, I have a biased sample.
Right.
The last point of that road of too much access leading to distraction leads to, and the parenting history and self-esteem movement leads to low distress tolerance. So, yes, a lot of young people are left with either subpar jobs or no jobs at all, which leaves parents in alerts of how do I support my child through this process?
Right.
And for that, we turn to the laws of behaviorism, right? You do your best to reinforce the behaviors that are moving in the right direction while not punishing small approximations to the goal. And you have to set up a structure with your child. So if not to jump the gun, if that was a question I was being asked, that's what I often help parents set up, what we call contingency management. How do we arrange a structure that identifies goals of the young adults that are within their values? What do they care about deeply? And then making small approximations to those goals and reinforcing them. So with your daughter, I would say, you know, for, you'd set a time limit on how long the minimum wage job was okay while supplementing it, and then start making incremental changes that she has to take an additional class or she has to start identifying and what she really wants to do. We're not going to have an exact answer, and that's where my life is a testament, that you don't know where you're going to end up. And that's where the uncertainty and tolerance comes in.
No, you're saying uncertainty tolerance for the parents. And I think part of what is so hard is that for each kid, that little increment, you know, I mean, I think that's kind of the big challenge, is to understand that this is baby steps, you know, so I'm starting with, watch what you're spending the money on. Okay. That's what
How
I'm saying
to her.
So when you ask your daughter to watch what she's spending,
she could watch what she's spending
forever. It's true.
What she's spending is easy.
She wasn't even doing that. I mean, you know.
Need the how.
Is that she has, now that everything's online, she has access to the bank accounts, so she can see exactly what it is that the money's going for.
So maybe I would suggest add a behavior in there that she needs to either print that or send it to you.
Got it. In some way,
especially as long as you are offering financial support, then you have the right to claim certain requests.
Right. So I can say to her, each month I want you to print that out, and I want you to look at where how much you spend on food, how much you spend on rent, and give me the totals, and then we'll compare them each month.
Mm-hmm. And we know from science that just monitoring something, just putting eyeballs on something, will change the behavior.
Excellent. Well, I'd like to get to Maureen from Rhode Island. You're on Dr. Radio here at Sirius XM 110.
Good morning. I heard bits and pieces of the last lady. My daughter just graduated from SCAD. On a roll with sequential art degree, doing great. However, she can't find a job anywhere in the art field. She's depressed. I know the Keppra doesn't help because she has myoclonic seizures and stuff, but she can't take any antidepressants either. She got a full-time job, but it's in a bank, and that even makes her more depressed every day she goes in. She's living at home. She can't afford to live on her own, making $13 an hour. The rents are $1,000 a month. And, if she buys a car, I mean, her car is getting on the end of the life. But I just worry about her, you know, getting stuck in this job. And I'm just wondering, how can I motivate her? Should I coach her back to school to get a different degree?
Okay, that's an excellent question. How can you motivate your adult child? I love that question. And there's a great succinct answer to that. You want to help your daughter connect to her why. Why does she care deeply about the arts? And there's some exercises you can do with her. But specifically, you want to help her there's two pieces, actually. Figure out, why is that important to her? Why does she care so much about the arts? What does it bring into her life? How does it make meaning into her life? And so it sounds like she's already connected to her why, that she loves the arts. The problem is a functional one of getting a job and getting through the discomfort of finding a job in her field. And that's the second part. I often have clients, and I have an exercise in my book where I have people visualize what they really, really want. And you might even think to your own life as moms that when you visualize what you'd really, really, if there was no limits and you could have whatever you want, even then, when you try to visualize in the little virtual reality of your mind, you'll notice that you get a little anxious or a little worried, or your mind immediately says, oh, I could never do that. Oh, that would be too hard. So you want to figure out, and here's what I'm saying, you want to find out what happens in your daughter's mind or in your own mind when you visualize the success you want. Because in that space in the mind is where some of the internal barriers get in the way. And that's the depression, which when we're depressed, we're, of course, withdrawn. We have lack of energy. So we want to figure out what's getting in the way when she visualizes being in the arts and being successful there. What kind of internal inhibitions are showing up? and making her distress tolerance difficult moving in that direction. Then you would help her identify specific baby steps, as we were talking about, the scaffolding that moms have to do in support, help, which might be hard for you. If you don't know what to do, maybe you can ask around for her, for people in her field that could talk to her, help her, you know, interview people in the arts in the specific area that she's interested in to help motivate her. Hello?
Maureen? I never heard of sequential art. Yeah?
Go ahead.
I'm here. Finding people in sequential art is hard. Finding people in the career with sequential art is hard. Animation, yes, but sequential is... a lot of the jobs that I've looked at, they want the animation with it. I'm thinking she has to go back another... 4 years.
Well, she might have to do that, and that might be if she's visualizing the kind of career that she wants, and you get, and that's again, it's through repeatedly connecting to that that sort of aha moment when you're, you know, when you've found something you really love, a book, a pair of shoes, a guy, whatever, and your eyebrows go up, you sit up a little bit, your voice gets a little faster. We want to connect her to that aha energy, and that might be what she needs to connect her to the energy to going back to school, if that's feasible right now. And it might not, but again, you have to break down the problem into all these micro little steps that she can take, whether it's starting, I think you could probably find someone who does what she wants to do and then interview those people as specialists, almost like finding mini mentors on the internet. So there's pragmatic problem solving, but the psychological piece is connect to the values and the aha moment, and then learn to practice the distress tolerance skills of sitting with the discomfort and pushing through and controlling the only thing in your control, which is your actions.
I'm going to put that up at work, aha moment.
Yeah, that's...
And then,
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much, Maureen. Good luck to your daughter. I think that your problems... sadly for all of us, are probably not unique.
Alone.
You're not unique. And again, folks, we are talking about adulting, kids who are getting stuck either right after high school or in college or even after college, who are living at home. Both if you are struggling with that or you're a parent and you're struggling with that, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone lines are open at 1-877-698-3627. That's 1-877-NYU-DOCS. Or by email at docs@SiriusXM.com. Again, Maureen, thank you very much, and good luck with that. And I'd like to welcome Amanda from Tennessee. You're on Dr. Radio here at SiriusXM 110.
Hi. Okay, I have a question, or I guess I need advice. my son is 24. When he graduated high school, he did go to college for 2 years, and then he, you know, took the break, and he has not gone back. He does work full-time, but I can't get him motivated to find out what he wants to do with his life or, you know, what direction he wants to take. He did see a life coach from January 2017 to January 2018, and we still didn't get any kind of movement with that.
I'm guessing that your question is similar to the prior question, which is that all elusive motivation piece. I would suggest if you work with someone that you find someone who's accredited maybe in something like what I practice, which is the acceptance and commitment therapy called ACT. That would be very helpful. But again, I'm terribly sorry.
It's okay.
That cold that's going around. We want to create an environment that's validating and supportive and nurturing for him to explore even the most wild of ideas, just so we can get it out there. And I know that's really hard when you're like, okay, let's get things moving now. It's very easy to get impatient. So getting him to explore every possible feasible... Does he have any inclination of what he's connected to or thinking about yet?
No, and we've even... he struggled with school, and so I know, regular college, quote unquote, regular college isn't for everyone. So I've even been trying to get him to tour a technical school, you know, like learn a trade, just anything to get him. And he doesn't do any kind of social media. Like, he's not on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. So I don't feel like he has the pressure, like you were talking about earlier, from the social, you know, having to be up to everyone's social standards. But I don't know.
Well, it sounds like if he's had difficulty in the school in the past, and this is the access problem, that so many people are whizzing ahead when they do have those skills, and that, and when they, when school came easily, and when they do use the social media. So it sounds like your son is maybe a little withdrawn and inhibited, and so finding his why is going to be a little bit more difficult. What I would recommend is really go through with him. If there was no... if there was no limits whatsoever, if the sky was the limit, and just sort of play a game with him. And I know that with young men, this is a little bit harder with girls who are a little bit more vocal about their things, but ask him to make a list in his own head. And if he's shy about you reading it, you could start with saying, just do it for yourself. I just want to see the list from far away that you did it. And see if he can connect to something. Does he enjoy any other sports or time with his friends or video games? Is there something that he enjoys that you can identify?
Yes. He loves video games, and he plays online with his friends at night after he gets home from work.
Okay. So I'd ask him what it is about that that he likes.
Okay.
And find out. So you want to find out. You want to find out what draws him. Rather, there are two ways that behavior is reinforced, and this is important. It either brings us more pleasure or reduces our discomfort. The difficulty with video games and things like that, as well as distraction, internet, and social media, is that oftentimes we keep returning to it because it shuts out the rest of the world. So if he says that video games help me calm down rather than they make me feel better, you want to find out what is it he is calming down from. And then your target, as we say, would be to help him to tolerate those feelings of discomfort. So hopefully I'm being clear about the recipe for success here is identify your values, aha moment, thing that gets you excited, right? And then identify what kinds of feelings and thoughts are coming up when you think about that thing that get in the way of you moving forward. So video games is a perfect example of how of something we call experiential avoidance. And that's where everybody gets stuck, not just young adults, in doing that thing we do over and over again, whether it's overeating, oversmoking, avoiding, zoning out in front of the TV. We get stuck in this experiential avoidance because we need to build our distress tolerance to the discomfort to move forward towards what we want.
You know, that's really excellent advice. We are actually up against a break. I'm not sure if Dr. Fielding can stay with us, but we will see. I know there are a lot of people that still want to talk about this topic on our phone, so hang on there. We will get to them, whatever. Lara, we'll see what your schedule's like. I'm so sorry. We're just up against a break. I'm Dr. Carol Bernstein. You can hear me every week on the radio on Tuesday mornings from 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern, repeated 8 to 10 p.m. We'll see you in a few minutes.
Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter.
Welcome back to all of our listeners to Dr. Radio here at Sirius XM 110. Excuse me. I'm Dr. Carol Bernstein, a professor of psychiatry and neurology here at NYU. And I want to remind those of you who tweet that you can follow us on Twitter at NYU Docs to find out the topics we're discussing on each show as we're discussing them. And do remember that Dr. Radio was established for you, the listening audience, to provide access to experts in the field of medicine who can respond to your comments and answer your questions. So keep those phones handy. Our phone lines are open at 1-877-NYU-DOCS. That's 1-877-698-3627. You can also email us at docs@SiriusXM.com. And I'm delighted that my first segment guest is able to stay with us, because this is a topic I could talk about endlessly, and I think our listeners could too. My guest is Dr. Lara Fielding, PsyD, EDM. She is a clinical psychologist in California who specializes in mindfulness-based cognitive behavioral therapy. She is trained in using ACT and DBT, and she's going to tell us what those are. We haven't done that yet, Lara. She's also author of the new book, Mastering Adulthood, Go Beyond Adulting to Becoming Emotional and Grown Up. I'm so glad you could stay with us, Lara.
My pleasure, my pleasure.
And, you know, we do have more callers on the line, so if they could just hold on for a minute. I thought it would be worthwhile to talk just a little bit about ACT and DBT, since one of the issues that we're trying to help people cope with is this emotional piece. You know, how do we help people deal with those emotions where they're doing video games to avoid things, et cetera?
Exactly. And so the title of my book is How to Become an Emotional Grown-Up. And it uses those two words, in, not emotional and grown-up, but you're not wrong. That is exactly what it is. How to use your emotions productively. And that's where ACT and DBT come in. Acceptance and Commitment Therapy is actually pronounced ACT. And it is, I realized when I was giving very complex answers to your prior wonderful guest questions, that really when you feel like your kids are getting very stuck, that's when you might want to reach out to a professional trained in one of these therapies. And I would say that based on my research, depending on the degree of difficulties and what we call dysregulation, when the motivation, emotions, and behavior system is either stuck in avoidance or depression or anxiety, that will help guide your decision. Acceptance and commitment therapy is what I was describing earlier, where you identify your aha or your values, and then you come up with small approximations to the goals related to those values and tolerate the emotions that come up along the way. A trained clinician in acceptance commitment therapy can be very helpful in helping you roadmap out all of that terrain. And that therapy is, by the way, of course, evidence-supported in a multitude of diagnoses, but it's more what we call process-based, so it's less pathologizing, I'd say.
Right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry for the long answers. Dialectical behavioral therapy was developed for more complex and persistent problems with chronic suicidality and possibly self-harm, but it's also been found helpful across a spectrum of emotion dysregulation difficulties as well. It's a more complex staged therapy, and it's about 6 months or a year if you do two cycles. It includes a specific skills-building group and the individual therapist, as well as phone coaching. And it was developed by a woman named Marsha Linehan in the 80s, and it's super effective. So if you have a very high, complex, difficulty, high needs child, then you want to look into dialectical behavioral therapy, because that is the gold standard for when you have really big problems.
Right.
Both are excellent treatments.
No, that's all really true. And we'll talk more about that, and maybe you can give an example of some of the techniques with people that you've seen. But
pleasure.
We have a whole lot of people from Texas, believe it or not, who are listening. So I'd like
early to risers.
Yes, early risers. I'd like to welcome Renee from Texas. You're on Dr. Radio here at Sirius XM 110.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for being there. I have a 22-year-old that went to a technical college on a scholarship. He's just a lively person, that he's making good money. He makes his own truck payment, his insurance, and helps with the phone bill. Great. So, talking about baby steps, he stays in his room a lot. Mm. He has a few select friends, but old faithful friends, excuse me, we live in a small community, so I want to know what is the next right step for him, because he makes really good money. The kid makes like $22 an hour and works 40 to 60 hours a week. Mm. How to get him ready to maybe get his own apartment, or... You know, he's starting to offer, "Mom, do you need some help?" My mother, who's 81, lives with us. So I see him starting to be more comfortable in his salary and offering to help. So I was just wondering about that.
Great question, Renee. Thanks for asking. And you said two really key important words there. You said, how can I get him ready and how can I get him comfortable? And that's where we get stuck. So in our emotion and motivation system, we're trying to get these kids motivated. And at the same time, we're trying to make them feel comfortable. And that's where we're not being helpful. Our goal has to change as parents and guides. It's from one of getting them to feel ready and getting them to feel comfortable doing it to getting them to do it even with the discomfort.
Right. I think that's really important.
And that is where the skills come in of identifying what's the discomfort they don't want to feel, or what's the discomfort as parents we don't want to feel watching our kids feel, because, of course, your children are like your heart walking around outside your body. If they feel it, you feel it 10 times more. What is that discomfort no one wants to feel, and how do I sit with that discomfort from a place of what we call non-reactivity? That means let the discomfort be there and stay committed to the goal of the behavior that needs to take place. So starting to look for apartments, noticing any anxiety around that, and starting to set those goals again. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Your next question might be, how do I do that?
I was going to ask that.
Right.
So,
okay, go.
Okay, I'll try to make this, I have this bad habit of wanting to answer every question and help everything all in one time. But again, so if the recipe is, the recipe for everybody listening, for every question will always be, identify what the aha moment is, identify what it is you have to feel to get in the direction of the aha moment. And so for your son, identify if you would, so I ask people to identify five particular things that are happening in any given moment, and here they come. In this moment, there's one true fact. We're all on this call from different places in the country, which is being broadcast live. Everyone agrees upon that. The other four components are subjective to each of us. What am I thinking? What are my emotions? What are my bodily sensations? And what is my impulse? So if you write those things down, or get my book and go through it. What are the facts? What are my thoughts? What are my emotions? What are my bodily sensations? What are my impulses? In those four pieces, you're going to find some discomfort shows up when you're moving towards something that's important. So in that place, once you identify what's uncomfortable, you use your skills. I'll walk you through one quick, easy skill that says, I am willing to feel this feeling as I walk through this difficulty. And it basically goes like this. It's called Willingness Hands, and there's a video in the book. So the book includes 15 QR code-linked skills videos that I produced so I can demonstrate these in person to the reader. They just need to swipe their camera phone in front of the QR code, and up pops a video of me teaching them. So Willingness Hands goes like this for listeners. If you can, if you're not driving or if you're still, placing both feet flat on the floor, palms in your lap, palms up and out, dropping the shoulders down, opening the chest up, softening the belly. And when you take that pose, that is willingness pose, just taking that pose, and you could even add in a little intentional statement like, I'm willing to have this discomfort. I'm noticing this discomfort. You're sending a message from your primitive body up into your brain that you are, in fact, open to your experience. There is no threat. You've got this. You can handle it. So it's palms out and up, shoulders down, chest
open. It's
like
a yoga move almost. Yeah.
It is, because our body informs our mind just as much as our mind informs our body, and you can hack into that system. The easiest, best hack is through your behavior and through things like paced breathing. Paced breathing means you inhale for 5 and you exhale for 7. So the key with paced breathing is that you make your exhales longer than your inhales. This will slow your sympathetic nervous system so that you feel a little bit less distress, so you don't get into a panic attack. So paced breathing is longer exhale than inhale. And you just keep breathing like that. So inhale 5, exhale 7. Inhale 5, exhale 7. Throw that together with a willingness hands, and that's one short-term skill you can use to keep yourself moving in the right direction.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I'm going to use this.
Yeah,
I'm so pleased. If you ever have any follow-up questions, don't hesitate to email me.
sure will.
All right. Thank you, Renee. I really appreciate it. And again, folks, if you are just tuning in, my guest is Dr. Lara Fielding. She is a psychologist in California specializing in mindfulness-based and cognitive behavioral therapies. Her approach is research-based and aimed to help build stress, resilience, and effective coping. I can't even tell you how important I think that is. I've been very involved in resilience issues in medicine, which is, I mean, it's a little bit different, but it's definitely related. Dr. Fielding is the author of a new book entitled Mastering Adulthood, Going Beyond Adulting to become an Emotional Grown-Up. So if you have a child at home, if you yourself are struggling at home with your parents and you want to get out there and do things and are finding that you're stuck, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone lines are open at 1-877-NYU-DOCS. That's 1-877-698-3627. You can also email us at docs@SiriusXM.com. And I'd like to welcome Roseanne, also from Texas, but it's a big state, maybe another part. You're on Doctor Radio here at SiriusXM 110.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I've got a situation. I've got two sons. One is going to college locally on scholarship, living at home. He's 20. I also have a 22-year-old who graduated from college, also living at home, looking for work. The younger one has a part-time job. The older one, he is very gifted in writing. He submitted some publishing. That said, he does not have an income. So my question is, at 20 and 22, two boys living at home, how much can I expect them to, and how can they contribute, or should they contribute financially to the home? Because I'm a single parent. It's just me and them.
Wow. Yeah, that is a lot for you. Well, you can expect them to contribute as much as they can, right? And so then it goes back to how do you set them up to begin doing that?
Right.
So another important part of motivating your adult child is validating the difficulty they're having. So your older child might be a more sensitive, creative type of kid. Do you think that's true?
Yes.
Okay. So one of the most important skills, we've been talking a lot about behavior change here, but here's actually the secret sauce that I haven't talked about yet, and that is called validation. And that doesn't mean validation meaning cheerleading, hey, you're a great kid, you're doing awesome. In fact, it might be the opposite. Validation is honoring the difficulty the
right.
person or yourself is experiencing. So you might say something to your son like, I know this is really hard for you, or even ask him, what are you finding hard about this? In a really non-judgmental, compassionate tone, help me understand what the difficulty is moving towards this goal so I can help you with it. And honoring and saying, that makes complete sense. It makes sense that you're feeling that difficulty. And you can validate on three levels. You can validate that biologically it's difficult for them. You can validate them that anyone would have difficulty looking for a new job. It's really scary. Or you can validate them that historically, if they were bullied or had some past experience that made this particular action more difficult for them, you can validate that it feels familiar. So you can validate the biology that anyone would feel that way or historically. And I have a not-so-creative acronym for that, which is validate the BA. So that will help motivate them or at least make them feel less inhibited about having to do it, because they'll feel what we're after here is normalizing
right.
the discomfort that shows up
right.
in transitioning into adulthood. But as far as what you can expect them to contribute, we have to get them moving before we can expect them to contribute anything. And then I think you're fully and absolutely should be asking them for their help.
Yeah, I mean, I think that so this is an issue of also figuring out what they think they can do.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And what the key being think there, right? What can they do as able-bodied young men, right? And how can you support them getting some money in, but keeping them in line towards their values and life worth living dreams, right? So one other parent called that she was worried that the son would get stuck just making money at a dead-end job, right? So it's very difficult. There's that navigation between get them a job, right, and then also supporting other goals that are related to their larger goals, and their first job is highly unlikely to be their dream job, which is maybe another difficulty with the social comparisons and when they see everyone jumping right into a reality show or a tech, you know, tech discovery or something.
So could Roseanne start with her older son? And I mean, I know you said not it shouldn't just be think, but what could he contribute to? I mean, how do you start the conversation?
Well, first you schedule it. Right. Sometimes it's the small little behaviors that we have to do. You have to notice the anxiety around scheduling it. And then you say, when will be a good time for you? Let's talk about this. I'm curious. And you just really want to, you want to watch that tone. Trust me, I know it took a lot of training to get rid of my tone. So especially when you're frustrated about lack of progress. And then ask them what they think they can do. What do they think the solution to the problem is? Do they think, and then if they say, no, I absolutely don't think I need to be contributing, then you share yours. Okay, so I understand that you don't think you need to be contributing, and there, you know, he might be comparing himself to his friends that, you know, we see lots of young people delaying adulthood longer and longer. And you explain to them, okay, now maybe you can see my perspective. I'm a single mom, and this is really hard for me. Can you see my side? And I know that sucks that I don't have more money or whatever for you. And I know from your perspective you might think I should. Can we work together on this? And then identify some, I would just identify something. So he gets actually in the habit of giving, and then in the habit of, even if it's, I don't care if it's a dollar, starting with something. This is for the, we're asking for the son who has a job currently, correct?
Well, the older one doesn't, right?
Yeah, it was a younger son, I think.
Younger son had the job, yeah.
Job. He's going to school locally full-time on scholarship. So
it is a lot for him, but if you need the help, you need the help, right? And
right.
So a lot of the difficulty with transitioning that young adults are having is accepting reality on reality's terms. Right, when we see these fabulous lives of other people, we think, why don't I have that? Not
right.
Fair.
Right.
Yeah. And
right.
And unfortunately, life isn't fair. I'm
yeah.
Sorry to say.
Roseanne, I want to thank you for the questions because I think they're important. I did want to say, Lara, I am struck by something that I don't think we've focused on enough, which is that this generation has grown up without understanding without being able to tolerate the uncomfortable affect, you know, the uncomfortable feelings. And we have to help them learn that.
Yes, yes, yes. Exactly. And half of that is just in how we speak around languages, right?
Right.
This idea that, oh, don't feel that way. Don't worry about it. And I often give a classic example in my practice is right now, if listeners and you in the studio could right now notice that you can feel your bottoms in the chair.
Yeah.
You can feel your bottom? Great. Okay, now I'd like you to do a little quick experiment. Could you please try not to feel your butt in the chair? Go ahead, I'll wait.
Yeah,
you're laughing because it doesn't work.
Right,
but we try to do this with our emotions. We try to do this with our kids' emotions. We do everything we can to help them not feel their feelings. And we've been very successful at that, unfortunately. And now they don't have the distress tolerance. So now the way we speak around, gosh, I know it's really uncomfortable, and I know you've got this, kid. You can do this. So you a combination of support that they can tolerate their emotions, and if they're really having trouble, then you seek some assistance from a professional or a self-help book like mine or mine in how to do that. But that's the main piece.
For me, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, please.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's not just the finances. I don't want to raise prima donnas. I don't want them to feel entitled and spoiled and not understand, you know, and that's really more the angle I'm coming from, that I don't want them to feel spoiled, privileged, and not, you know, take responsibility for their lives.
I love the idea of responsibility. I have almost a whole chapter on it, and I'll say this. Notice how we spoke about that just in that moment. I don't want them to feel. And we have to be really careful because they will feel how they feel based on their past experience. And their past experiences in a world where everyone has a lot or where people have more than them. And so if they feel that they deserve certain things, they can feel that all they want, just like feeling. But part of the problem and what we hear of the stereotypical entitlement and narcissistic and lazy stereotypes of young people these days is that they were raised, everyone gets a trophy, and I'm entitled, right. But now they're being told, don't feel that way. Well, we can't blame them for feeling that way because we programmed it. So,
right, no, and I am so sorry, but we are up against a very hard break. And I know we have more callers, and I want to thank you for calling in. But, Lara, I think we'd like to have you back. This is such an amazing topic.
My pleasure.
I'd like to thank my guest, Dr. Lara Fielding, who is a psychologist in California. She has a new book out entitled Mastering Adulthood, Going Beyond Adulting to Become an Emotional Grown-Up. I recommend that. Thank you again. We'll have you back on. We will see you in a few minutes.